you won.
I see happiness as a form of resistance. For us, the resistance is against those who seek to destroy us individually and as a community. This is why we both grieve and celebrate. For those who have died, for those still alive, and for that little trans child who is waiting to be born. I see happiness as a form of resistance. And we will continue to resist. They have not destroyed us. They have not eliminated us. And they will not prevent us from mourning our dead, from celebrating our lives, from moving forward, and from always remembering, both with pain at our loss and with joy at the possibility of a new, bright, and hopeful future.
All right, we are here. It is the Rebecca Gerard Show. We are back. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, my goodness. It's been a little crazy. I know we've been off the air for about 3 weeks. I might as well just get stuff out of the way off the top. I lost my dad about a week and a half ago, and needless to say, family came together. It was a funeral and the whole thing. And, of course, the Jewish family like mine, we do what's called sitting shiva, which means there's a week-long thing where you go over to somebody's, one of the family members' houses, you talk, you know. And, of course, it's Jews, so we eat lots and lots of Jewish soul food. Food's always good, but, yeah. You know, basically it's a time to gather with family and talk about, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm, you know, it was a process, and now that's kind of calming down.
Oh, I'm so glad you're back. I missed you.
And, yeah, I missed me, too. I missed you. I missed the show.
You missed all of the folks out
there. Doing what we do every week.
Yeah.
You know, because this helps keep me on an even keel. This helps keep me. This is, you know, we were talking about this before the show, Mr. Mike. This therapy. Is therapy for us.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is. And so I am really excited to be back. We've got plenty of stuff to talk about. We got a great guest. We got Brad Delaney coming down at the bottom of the hour from out of Seattle. He's with MoveOn.org. We're going to talk ENDA. We're going to talk a little bit about progressive politics and how does the LGBT civil rights movement fit into the greater progressive agenda. We'll bounce those questions off of Brad. We'll see what he has to say. We've got plenty of stuff. I mean, well, of course, we had the ENDA vote. We've talked about that. But I'll tell you the truth. Over the course of this last 3 weeks, what we've gotten is exactly what we expected to get from John Boehner and House Republicans, which is that Boehner did not say, no, absolutely, we won't allow a vote, but he did say that he thinks it would harm small businesses and give rise to frivolous lawsuits. Both of which charges, by the way, are statistically proven to be bullshit, okay? We know that Boehner's lying here. I mean, he's just lying. He's just making shit up. I mean, there's no factual basis for this whatsoever. Okay? So, I mean, you know, certain times when the Republicans make arguments, certain times, and you know what? Democrats are guilty of this too. So let's not, you know, think that Democrats are any great shakes here. But the truth is, when Republicans make these kind of arguments, you just have to go and check it against the facts. And the fact is that this guy knows perfectly well that there is no factual basis whatsoever. None. No factual basis whatsoever for making these kind of charges. These kind of laws, they've been shown in the states, very, very modest increase in charges. Because you know what? Here's the reality. And this guy is supposedly, Mr. Big Shot, John Boehner, is supposedly a small business owner. He should know this. The truth is, there really isn't much of an increase in lawsuits. And those that do make it far enough are, frankly, they're usually guilty. What this is, okay, and everybody says, oh, you know, look at how great the Senate was, and wasn't it a victory? Bullshit, this was no victory. Who's winning? Who won? Did you get anything? Do you have anything that you didn't have before this Senate vote? Has your life changed in any way? Are you any better protected now than you were before? No, you're not. Okay, so what these people are telling you is bullshit. It is bullshit. What this is this was a political performance from day one. Okay? Now, don't get me wrong. Okay? There is absolutely value. And real political value. I mean, I'm not discounting this in any way. There is real political value in Harry Reid bringing the and up for a vote in the Senate, having it passed by, I would add, with the assistance of 10 Republicans. Every Democrat in the Senate voted for it, plus 10 Republicans. That is significant. It is not to be discounted. It is an important progress. But it is not a victory. It is progress, yes. But you can only have a victory when you win something. Nobody won anything here. I mean, shit, this isn't even halftime. Okay, what's more is they went and they did this knowing full well that this is exactly what Boehner was going to do. Okay, everybody could say, oh, no, you know, who knew? We thought he might do a 180 on this. I mean, does anybody really believe that John Boehner was going to suddenly do a 180 like the White House was arguing? Like we kept hearing from Jay Carney? Oh, yeah, we expect that the momentum will carry it through the House. What momentum? Boehner just said no. I think it's frivolous, and his aides have already said it's unlikely it'll go up before a vote. I mean, is there anybody out there really who did not see this coming? Seriously? Seriously. Is there anybody out there listening to the sound of my voice right now who does not know that this was bullshit and that these people knew that this was bullshit from day one? And let me tell you what this actually is. This is not fighting to get ENDA passed into law. If that's what this case, if that's what they were trying to do, if they were legitimately trying to pass this bill into law, we would have seen all of this in 2009. During the 111th Congress when Democrats controlled the House, they controlled the Senate, and they controlled the White House. That's what we would have seen. We would have seen them do exactly what they're doing now. We would have seen these op-eds from Obama and Harry Reid and making promises and Tom Harkin and blah, 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 blah. Okay, we would have seen all this stuff happening in 2009, but we didn't. What did we get? We got crickets. We got fucking crickets. That's what we got. Okay, we got promises that lasted exactly up until the day that Obama was elected into office, and then they forgot all about us and went and focused on the rich folks. Well, let's see. What's on the Human Rights Campaign menu for today? I mean, literally. That's what it is. I mean, you know, I used to call HRC the Democratic Party lapdog. But in reality, you know what? It's really more of a symbiotic relationship than that. Now, I think, okay, because I don't want to tar unfairly here. HRC over the last, I don't know, 6 months or so has been making an effort, and they should, it's noticed and it should be appreciated. They are making an effort, okay? They and their effort is having results. They did a great job with that Lisa Murkowski postcard thing. They've been using their weight as the major organization to do some good on the end of front. And that is to be commended, okay? I don't want anybody to think that I don't appreciate that, but let's be honest. Okay, the Human Rights Campaign is cleaning up their own mess here. Let's not have any illusions about that. If not for them and their friends in Washington and all these big money, wealthy, self-centered, selfish bastard donors who make up the major donor class in Washington, D.C., if not for those folks, ENDA would be law today. Make no mistake about it. These are the people who caused ENDA to fall off the radar in 2009 because everybody was too worked up about Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the hate crimes bill, both of which sound very nice, but really, in real practical terms, help very, very, very few people. I mean, really, how many times has the hate crimes law been invoked since it was passed? What, twice? I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm sure it was very important for those particular people. But if you're looking to help people, you know, honestly, how much of a percentage of the workforce are LGBT soldiers? How about less than 1%? And Nancy Pelosi said at Netroots Nation, and I might add, I was in the audience when she said this. I was there. Okay? This was not some edited video I watched on TV. I watched her say this on stage in front of me and a whole room full of progressives. where she said, oh, well, you know, the community said that what they weren't enthusiastic about ENDA. And they wanted to see Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the hate crimes bill go first. Now, anybody who actually pays attention and actually talks to the real community, in other words, working class folks, not these, you know, martini drinking elitists in Washington, but people who live in the rest of the country, the real world where people work for a living and have to, you know, do things like pay the rent and get, figure out how they're going to feed their families and put gas in the car and all those little things that, you know, they don't have to just like, you know, sign off a chit and, you know, press a button to order dinner that night. You know, people who have to actually budget their lives, the people that live outside of the DC bubble in the real America, those folks, they didn't give a shit about the hate crimes bill. They didn't give a shit about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. What they cared about was jobs, just like everybody else in this country. And that is when the Democratic Party, the Human Rights Campaign, and all their buddies in Washington threw the average working class LGBT American off the bus to pander to their own narrow agenda. And this is the situation we got. The first chance in over a generation to pass that bill into law, and Democrats went for the big shiny and the big pile of cash and squandered it. Completely fucked over this community. Okay, and you know, I'll tell you something. I read something earlier this week. Bernie Sanders is thinking of running for president, independent socialist senator from Vermont. Oh, please. Oh, be still my progressive heart. I'm telling you, you know what I want? I want Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren on the ticket. That's what I want. Okay, you know, I would love... You know, now everybody's saying, you know what the big fight among progressives on that one is? Should it be Sanders-Warren or Warren-Sanders? I mean, really, you know, that's what we need to do. We need a guy like Bernie Sanders. We need a woman like Elizabeth Warren. I mean, that's what we need. We need real progressives in the leadership here instead of these fucking money-motivated cowards like Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama. I mean, it kills me because Obama, he came out with this little blurb speech. I don't know. Do we have it up, Mr. Mike? Where is it? Did you post that one?
I'm looking for that. The
Mano? It was in my last email, and the reason I don't see it...
Uh-oh.
I don't want to play it because there's a video that auto-plays on that page.
Oh, dear. Okay. I'll see if I can get that up on the other side of your interview, which is coming up. How about
that?
All
right. Yeah, okay. Well, suffice it to say, for now, maybe we'll cover that later. Suffice it to say, for right now, Barack Obama comes out with this op-ed and says, you know, this is very nice things. We should pass ENDA, and it's high time. And I'm reading this, and it's all lovely words, and it's all nice to see, and all that stuff, and all that good stuff. And I can't help thinking, while I'm reading this, I can't. There's a little voice in the back of my head saying, "Where the fuck were you 5 years ago, dude?" I mean, seriously, if you guys were serious about passing this bill, you would have passed it in the 111th Congress. This is not about passing the bill. It never was, not from day one. This was about protecting ENDA as a fundraising tool for 2014. That's what this was about. Make no mistake about it. This is about being able to fundraise. I mean, I don't know about you, but you guys... If you check your emails, if you get email from like organizations like Organizing for America and Democrats and people like that, I'm on all those lists. And I'm getting these emails that say basically like, oh yeah, we were with you all along and we support ENDA and send us money, 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 money. Which is like, you fucking liars. You weren't there. You had nothing to say on this for 5 fucking years. And now you're coming to us for money saying we were with you all the time? Go fuck yourselves. Fuck you. Go to your Human Rights Campaign and ask their executive board for some money because that's who you're serving. Fuck you. Fuck you. I'm sick of this crap. You want my money? You better show us something. Okay? And I'll tell you, I understand the Democrats are kind of caught in a bad spot here because now that they completely fucked things up in 2009, they got nowhere to go. All they got is unkept promises. And, you know, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Harry Reid, okay? But when you promised us the first time 4 years ago that you were going to bring the bill up, if you had brought it up then, we wouldn't have to be pissed off about this now because it would be law. Because at this time in the process, we'd be talking about when are they scheduling the signing ceremony at the White House, not, oh, shit, we're going to have to do this all over again in 2015. So, please, I hope these people come to me with their hands out and say, give us money because we passed this bill through the Senate. I'm going to say, and I hope you will, too, say, fuck you. Go back to your big money friends in Washington and ask them for money because they ain't coming from the working class. We need the money for ourselves because you fucked us over, just like you have been for the last 40 years. It's time to draw the line, people. It is time to say, you know what? You guys have had your shot. You're unreliable. You're untrustworthy. Fuck you, Hillary Clinton. I'm going for Bernie Sanders. I'm going for Elizabeth Warren. Those are people we can trust. Those are real progressives. They're not fake progressives. Like Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Nancy Pelosi. And Harry Reid, for that matter. Okay, yeah, sure, he allowed a vote. I mean, and wasn't it great? That, you know, it only took him how many years before he allowed a partial ban on the filibuster? You know, can't actually fully repeal the filibuster because, you know, that would take spine. Then they'd actually be able to get some legislating done. Well, we can't have that, can we? We only want pseudo-legislating so that we can, you know, this is a paid political advertisement, is what this is. That's what this is. This whole procedure with end of this year, from the Harkin Committee on down, what this is advertising for about political advertising for 2014 and just saying, look at how intolerant and bigoted the Republicans are. And they are. I mean, that's not in question. But then again, think of it this way. Boehner would have to be an idiot. An idiot. To bring this bill up for a vote, because then anyone in his caucus who doesn't vote for it will be branded a bigot. Now, where's the motivation to bring that up? They knew this. They're not stupid. This was a train wreck on the way about to happen from day one. Everybody knew it, and it was just a matter of watching it. And now the Democrats will say, "Oh yeah, well we gave it our best shot, and yeah, we'll try again someday." But could you give us some lots more money in the meantime? Oh, and by the way, money and money. And also, could you do us a favor and send us some money, too? I mean, that's what it's going to be. It's what it's been for the last 40 years. I think it's time we say, you know what? Fuck you. I'm giving my money to Bernie Sanders. Since Sanders for president. Fuck yeah. I mean, you know, I like him almost as much as I like Howard Dean. In fact, I like him as much. I don't think it's a coincidence that the best senators come from that area of the country, from the Northeast, from Massachusetts and Vermont. Too bad Massachusetts laws are among the most bigoted of any transgender-inclusive law that actually exists. It's the weakest and the most, frankly, laughable of the laws that are out there. But at least the state produces good politicians. I mean, okay. Mr. Mike tells me that thing was up. So I am refreshing, and let's see if I can find that statement here.
There. We pause to refresh.
I'm looking.
It's it down.
Here we go. Here we go.
There it is.
All right. Now, it doesn't really matter because we're up against a heartbreak. We're going to have Brad Delaney from MoveOn.org. He's coming in about 2 or 3 minutes. We're going to get him on the line, and we'll have him after our break. But, you know, I just to read a little bit of this, President Obama said part of what he said was today a bipartisan majority in the Senate took another important step in this journey by passing the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which should help end the injustice of our fellow Americans, blah, 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 blah. Just as no one in the United States could lose their job simply because of race, gender, or disability, nobody should lose their job simply because of who they are or who they love. Well, you know, I mean, these are all great words, but, you know, they mean nothing. They mean nothing. Because you had the power to turn this into law. You had the power to do something a few years ago. It was in your hands, and instead, you chose to use it as a fundraising tool to enrich your own campaign bank accounts. That's what you did. You had a choice between standing up for the working class and standing up for your own self-interest. And we saw which one you picked, didn't we? And when you come to us with your hands out again and you ask us you should trust us this time, I think we all should remember, why should we? Why should we? Like my grandmother used to say before she passed, what's to trust? Honestly, what's to trust? These people? I don't think so. All right, it is time for our break. We got some Wendy Carlos happening, and we will be back in a few minutes with Brad Delaney of MoveOn.org, so stick around. Oh my God, I remember that song from when I was a kid. Okay, we are back. How you doing? It is the Rebecca Juro Show. And we have got a very special guest, Brad Delaney from MoveOn.org. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, how are you, Becky?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm so glad we had a chance to talk. The first thing I want to ask you about is Move On, actually, because we see a lot. Of course, Move On is very well known, very big progressive organization. And we see them, they cover a lot of issues, a lot of progressive issues. What I personally, and maybe you can, you know, straighten me out on this, what I haven't seen a lot of from MoveOn.org is, you know, we've seen plenty of marriage from them as marriage support. Yep. We don't see a lot of working class LGBT support. A lot of stuff. I don't see a lot of stuff around ENDA and the issues of the LGBT working class. Do you think that's fair?
Well, Becky, that's changing. And I think that's a fair assessment from the past. But I think moving forward, Move On is committed to employment non-discrimination. We held an organizing summit here in Seattle. At that organizing summit, I actually met a lot of the higher-up people at Move On. They helped me devise a strategy for a Move On petition to ask the Senate, to get the Senate to vote for it. In the 3 weeks that we had the petition going, we garnered 21,000 signatures. We got 5 undecided Democratic senators to come over on our side. We got 10 Republican senators to vote for it in the Senate. And on top of that, so we got it passed in the Senate, and now Move On has actually partnered with Jeff Merkley from Oregon, on a petition asking the House to pass, and his petition actually now has 46,000 signatures on it. And as you know, Move On has a very powerful base. I mean, when John Boehner gets 46,000 signatures in his email box. I mean, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would like to think so, but you know, at the same time, I guess maybe I'm a little cynical here, but what I have seen is that the damage done by when we had Democratic control of the House and the Senate and the White House in 2009 during the 111th Congress, organizations, not only the Democrats, not only the politicians, not only the large LGBT organizations like the Human Rights Campaign and the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, but also major progressive organizations like Move On, every one of them was silent on this. Every single one of them. And, of course, what we got was the Democrats focused on the issues favored by the wealthy and the well-connected of D.C. insiders like Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal and the hate crimes bill, which are both great things, but really helped very, very few people compared to something right. like an Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
And inaction, you know, silence kills. We know this. So not speaking up actually does have a very powerful negative effect on our movement.
Yeah, I said this earlier in the show before you came on. I said in a lot of ways what we're seeing now is cleaning up of the mess that these folks made when they could have, you know, when we wouldn't even have to be arguing. Whereas if they did this in 2009, we'd be talking about when's Obama going to sign the bill. Instead of, oh, here right. we go, now we have to go back to this in 2015.
Right. Now, I would argue that instead of taking up the 47th vote to repeal Obamacare last week, Republicans in the House should be taking up reasonable legislation that protects jobs.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, we have Jared Polis, Representative Jared Polis, from Colorado, came out 2 weeks ago and said, we have the votes in the House. We just need to get to the floor. We've got Paul Ryan on record saying he supports it. He'll vote yes. I mean, these are big deals. And there's absolutely no reason why this should not come up on the floor. There's absolutely no reason why this sensible legislation should not come up on the floor.
I agree with you from a moral and, you know, progressive perspective. But yet, if you think about it, don't you think in terms of John Boehner's motivation for bringing this up, all he does, if he brings this up, is provide a club for Democrats in 2014 to bash them over the head as intolerant if anybody doesn't vote for this?
Well, I mean, I'm gonna tell you,
is there really an incentive for Boehner to bring this up?
I think they're already going to – I think – not bringing it up, it's going to be a smear campaign. It's going to be you decided to not vote for jobs. You decided to not protect employment.
That's going to be the smear campaign.
So he's going to get it one way or another. And I think the best way for him to get it would be to get our support. We voted to support employment.
I agree with you. I'm not as confident. I'm sorry, go ahead.
For Republicans that have been beating this drum about jobs for so many years, I think this is sensible for them to do right now.
I would agree with you, but I hope you're right. I just, you know, sensible is just, well, frankly, not a word I would describe the 113th Congress with, but okay. Anyway, I want to also hit some other topics. For example, you know, like I said, Move On is, of course, involved with a lot of progressive issues, not just employment for LGBT people and that kind of thing. You're kind of somebody who works in both fields. You have your hand in the LGBT movement, but you also have your hand in at this larger. Where do you think the LGBT movement fits in the larger progressive? I mean, are we a key part of this yet, or are we kind of taking a back seat to other issues that may be more popular, do you think?
Absolutely. So, you know, here's the deal. I think that we are a key issue here. We are a key constituent base. And I think as what you'll see through the 2014 elections and moving into 2016 is that LGBT issues are going to become more and more popular. And they're going – it's going to be – it's 2016 is definitely going to be a referendum on LGBT issues. It's going to be a referendum on employment non-discrimination. It's going to be a referendum on marriage equality because of how fast it's picked up in recent years. But here's the thing. I personally do believe that we share the seat. We share the hot seat with immigration reform. And I'm not going to say that that's a bad thing because they're both very important issues. And in some aspects, they do go hand in hand. I mean, you can get married in this country now and your partner still be deported. So these things do go hand in hand, and I'm not saying that one should take a back seat to the other, but we do share that hot seat with other issues, especially immigration reform.
Absolutely. And while I'm a full-throated supporter of immigration reform, one of the things that concerns me about it, and I think we saw this over the last year with the White House, is that because there's a perception among Democrats that they need to shore up the Latino vote, and conversely, there's a perception that, well, who cares about what LGBT people think? They'll vote for us anyway. Which is, I think, you know, I mean, I was told that to my face by a Kerry campaign operative in 2004. I mean, basically, it was like, we don't care what you people think because we don't have to work for your votes, basically. I mean,
I think what you're seeing with the LGBT movement is that we're catching these Democrats. When they vote against us, we're catching them. And I think what you're seeing now is that LGBT people are less likely to vote for a Democrat, and they're more likely to look into... Well, they're not less likely to vote for a Democrat, but they're more likely to look into the Democrats' background to make sure that they're LGBT friendly. We started weeding out a lot of the non-supportive Democrats, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You may be familiar. Bernie Sanders recently announced that he's considering a run for president if no true progressive presents themselves by 2016. Do you think that's a good idea? Is it time for a real progressive ticket to challenge the status quo? Are we at that point?
I think it is. Here's the thing. I think that I don't know. I'm not really versed in Bernie Sanders' full background, but I would say that Elizabeth Warren has taken the initiative to really get her name out there recently, and mm-hmm. I think I'm not gonna fall into the trap of trying to say that she is plotting for 2016. I think it's very possible she could be, but I think that Elizabeth Warren is setting up the backbone of a campaign where I don't see Bernie Sanders doing that yet. From my perspective, maybe I'm just not reading the right outlet, but that's what I see.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. And I admit, I hadn't even known this until just earlier this week when Sanders apparently made these comments. I would love to see, personally, I would love to see either a Warren-Sanders or Sanders-Warren ticket. Whether it would go anywhere, I don't know. But, you know, what I would hope would be that at least by having that kind of a selection in the primary process, it would drive the conversation more to the left. Because
absolutely.
I think that's a
absolutely.
Big problem. You know, our conversation, the issues we talk about as a nation are so far to the right. Don't you think?
And I think what we've got, I think the reason for that is because our politicians have pandered to corporate interests. That's what this is. Our politicians have pandered to corporate interests. They are in the pockets of corporate elitists. And I agree with you on that aspect. I think as we know, Bill Clinton was in the pocket of corporate elitists. Barack Obama's in the pocket of corporate elitists. I mean, look at his healthcare law. CEOs, people from health insurance organizations designed the law. They wrote the law. I mean, so they write the law to govern themselves. So I think that we need to move away from being in the corporate interest pocket and move forward back to the people, supporting the people.
I completely agree.
And while I support Hillary Clinton, I think that Warren, Elizabeth Warren, would be a better choice. I think she's on the right track. She does have corporate connections, but she doesn't have near the amount of corporate connections or pander to corporate interests like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and her husband have.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you there. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you are based in Seattle, in the Seattle area anyway, and of course Washington is the home of another big progressive hot-button issue, legal marijuana. And I was wondering, you know, for a state here, like I live in New Jersey, where we have medical marijuana, but it's so tightly controlled that you practically have to be on death's door before you can get permission to actually use it. I'm wondering, I mean, is it like what the right wing was predicting? I mean, is there like anarchy in the streets now that people can smoke all the pot they want?
Absolutely not. our drug crimes here are just absolutely minute compared to other parts of the country. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. They have a horrible problem with meth. And we just, you know, we just don't have those kinds of issues here, especially with medical, especially with marijuana. It's just really not that big of an issue. And it hasn't, the sky hasn't fallen. I'm sitting here in a cafe and nobody's looking up around me. I mean, it's nothing's changed really.
Yeah, because, you know, it seems to me, it just seems to make so much sense from a practical perspective. You eliminate billions of dollars that you have to pay to incarcerate people who are found guilty of these crimes, number one. And number two, you make yourself additional billions by taxing this stuff and regulating the commerce by, you know, licensing and things like that. It seems like a win-win on a practical sense.
It's definitely a win-win. I'm probably more progressive than a lot of progressives. I don't think that we should be taxing marijuana at 25% tax. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with the sin tax on marijuana. We don't sin tax coke. We don't sin tax candy. Why are we sin taxing marijuana? Why are we sin taxing
But we do sin tax cigarettes and alcohol. Come on. I don't know if I agree with you there. I don't know necessarily it should be 25%. That sounds a bit steep to me. But I think there should certainly be something.
Right. We definitely should tax it, but I don't think we should be taxing it what it's currently taxed at. In Washington State, we have a 25% tax on booze sales and a 25% tax now on marijuana sales.
Yeah,
and that's the same in Colorado as well. They just voted to approve a tax on marijuana there too.
Yeah, I think personally, and this is just again personal opinion, I think it should be taxed on a parity with booze. I mean, because I think it's kind of on that level. You know,
right? And the only reason that we have the high 25% booze tax here is because 2 years ago, we decided to deregulate our alcohol regulation system. So we took booze out of the hands of the state government, put it in the hands of private entities. And when we did that, we had to pay for deregulation. So they did that by taxing at 25%. So when the marijuana thing came through, it also came through at 25%, and it's also regulated by the same entity.
Okay. Well, you know, I hope that Washington and Colorado, for that matter, prove to be models. Show that the world is not going to collapse, and you know, if you just let people, you know, I mean, if this is not freedom, you know, if I want, right. I mean, you're hurting nobody. You know, and I would just hope that Washington and Colorado serve as models for the rest of the country on this.
And, you know, same note, Becky, Washington is actually a model on something else. Washington, for years, has been a model on employment non-discrimination.
You guys have full civil rights for LGBT, right?
Absolutely. We have full equality in Washington State, and the sky has not fallen. We don't have enormous rates of employment suits. We don't have these things happening here. So yeah. The argument that the Republicans and John Boehner have chosen to take up, that it's going to increase employment suits, it's simply not the case, and Washington State is proof.
Well, let me ask you a question there, because I think this is a valid concern. Are you sure that it's tough for these cases to make it to court? Because I know that in New Jersey, that certainly is the case. I've experienced it myself. Or is it alternatively that the culture in Washington is simply more accepting in general, and therefore less of these cases need to be brought?
Right. And I would completely agree with you on that one. I do think it is the culture, but I think part of the culture is changing the laws that govern our culture. And when you tell the world, we're not going to stand for this, we're not going to accept this kind of discrimination, then that changes the culture. It takes time, definitely, but it definitely changes the culture. And in Washington State, we have a very, very LGBT inclusive culture. On my side of the Cascade Mountains, which is the western Washington State, Seattle area, Olympia, Bellingham, all these areas are very, very progressive. I think we voted to approve marriage equality by like 55% margins. It's very inclusive over here. Seattle itself has 14% by population density LGBT people. So we have the second largest LGBT population by density in the country. So that also leads to, that also plays a large part into it.
I was going to say, you know, because it always seems, at least here on this side of the country, that the more dense a population of LGBT people you have in a given area, the more likely it is you're going to be well-treated as an LGBT person. I've just found from my own experience.
No, I completely agree with you.
So, anyway, before we wrap up, I'll hit you. First of all, is there anything that you or Move On or whoever is working on now that you want to let people know about?
Well, so Jeff Merkley has this petition circulating asking the House to vote, and it's specifically targeted at John Boehner. He's got 46,000 signatures on him, on his. I've also got one going, and I've got like 2,600 signatures. If you go to MoveOn's website and search for INDA, you'll find Jeff Merkley's petition. And the more people we can get to do that, and also another more people we can get to sign that is great. But also, what's really going to turn the tide on this is bringing in more co-sponsors. Jared Paul said this 2 weeks ago. The more co-sponsors we bring on board, the better. So if people look at the bill online and see that their legislator is not co-sponsoring this bill, call your legislator up and talk to them and say, why are you not co-sponsoring this bill? I voted for you. You serve me. Why have you not co-sponsored this bill? This bill needs your support. And ask them to co-sponsor it. Ask them to sign on to INDA in the House. Because the more support we can show, the better chances we have of actually getting John Boehner to fold and take a vote on this bill.
Absolutely. And I would also point out that just recently, I think it was just today, I was reading that Nancy Pelosi said that INDA now has more than 200 co-sponsors in the House.
Absolutely.
Which is new. That's new. It was up to like 185 last I heard.
Yeah, and this doesn't include a lot of the Republicans who have said that they will vote in support of this. As you know, Paul Ryan has said he's on the record saying that he will vote for...
But wait, is Paul Ryan on the record as saying he'll vote for an inclusive ENDA? Because up until recently, he was saying that transgender was a deal breaker for him.
Nope. I saw it as of 2 weeks ago on a video that has been circulated widely.
Oh, someone, really? I have to go dig that up. I must have missed that. Well, I've been kind of out of sync for the last couple of weeks, so.
Yeah, somebody caught him on the steps of the Capitol and asked him if he would support it, and he said, yes, I voted for it before, and I'll vote for it again.
Well, okay, so, good for him then. Yeah, what the heck? I mean, credit where credit is due and all that.
Yeah, so he's not co-sponsoring. So there's a lot of Republican support in the House that are not co-sponsors. They don't co-sponsor because it will cost them – it has the potential of costing them their electorate, and they're very conservative or teeter-tottering conservative districts. Where they barely won because of gerrymandering, it could have potential effects for them, but they will vote for it.
Interesting, you know. But of course, now we got to get Boehner to bring it up, and I'm still, you know, I guess I'm hopeful, but I'm just not seeing the path, you know.
Happened with Violence Against Women Act. He said he wouldn't bring that up for a vote too because of the LGBT inclusion. And he did, because we put enough pressure on him. So pressure, public support.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I really do hope you're right. But, you know, I can't help thinking every time I think of the hopes of that, I think, well, this is also the guy who just spent millions of taxpayer dollars on private lawyers to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. So I'm not so sure.
And it's also the same guy that scheduled a meeting room for anti-LGBT organization who has,
yes,
has propagated in Russia these anti-LGBT laws.
Exactly. So, and that's what I'm saying. And this guy keeps doing anti-gay stuff. So I'm not sure, you know, I mean, yes, okay, you know, pressure can do a lot. But, you know, it's harder to go against, I mean, you know, I mean, it's kind of like the hate crimes bill, I think. You know, I mean, how many Republicans are going to stand up and say, yes, I support LGBT people being beaten in hate crimes? I mean, not many people are going to stand up for that, but plenty of people will stand up against giving trans people and gay people jobs or the right to work, you know. So
right, and I'm ready to work with any organization that's interested in a smear campaign. I mean, honestly, if you vote against jobs, not bringing this up to a vote is voting against jobs. We need to hold Republicans accountable for that.
I completely agree. All right. Well, Brad, I want to say thank you so much for joining us. We're going to wrap it up. But I want to say thanks. I hope you'll come on again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Great. I hope I see you. Are you coming to Netroots Nation this year, next year? I hope so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, we just launched the LGBT NetrootsConnect.org.
Yes.
That launched today.
Absolutely.
And
anybody who wants to go to this thing and is interested in LGBT, go to this thing. I'll have to give the address. Do you have the address? I'll dig it up. I'll give
it to you. I do. It's LGBTNetrootsConnect.org.
There you go.
Or you can just go to NetrootsConnect.org. We have our tickets up for sale already for next year. We'll also be opening our scholarship in February or March.
Absolutely. It's
great.
And I will tell you, friends, having been there last year, it's going to be a blast. So I hope people will sign up because it was a lot of fun last year. This year. What am I saying? It's not even last year yet. I feel like it's last year, but it's been, you know, it was July. So now it feels like, you know, it's 5 months ago. It feels like, you know, but anyway, thanks, Brad. I really appreciate it. We'll catch
you
again soon.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Good. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. All right. And that was Brad Delaney from MoveOn.org. He is awesome. I love him. He's great. I met him, obviously, as you heard, at Netroots Nation last year. He is great. And we'll definitely be having him on again because he's good people and he knows his stuff, which is, of course, always what we want here on the show. And right now it is time for us to go to a break. We have got Fanta from Le Tigre. Oh, good stuff. We'll catch you in about five, gang.
On the morning of June 14, 1968, a group of hippies fled into the mountains of Colorado to wait for doomsday.
One. Good evening. I'm Amatia Dreese.
And I'm Kurt Rivera. It's a day of remembrance for Kern County's transgender community.
November 20th is observed worldwide to memorialize people who have been killed as a result of transgender violence. Eyewitness News reporter Jose Gaspar is here with more on how some people observe this day right here in Bakersfield. Jose?
And the acts of violence, including murder of transgender people, happen all over the world, including the United States. This day of remembrance is not just to remember the victims, but to educate people. According to human rights groups, more than 1,300 transgender people worldwide have been killed between 2008 and 2013 because of their sexual orientation.
This is for Amari Hill. She was loving, encouraging, harmless, and kind, and she was shot to death for being transgender on the 9th of this month.
Hill was killed in Richmond, Virginia. Wednesday evening, a group of people publicly observed Transgender Day of Remembrance as a way to memorialize those killed as a result of hate and violence.
Gender identity, people, transgender people, we face incredible amounts of violence and prejudice.
17-year-old Dean Wolliver admits living in conservative communities such as Bakersfield can be difficult and considers himself lucky he's not yet been subjected to any acts of violence because he's a transgendered male.
Transgender people, we're just being who we are, and there's no justification for killing a transgender person for being transgender. There's nothing that you could say that would justify that.
Supporters say this day is also meant to educate people about a basic human right.
I'm not saying you have to welcome them to your home with open arms, but at least just respect them and don't give them hate or bully them for it.
Earlier this year, the state legislature passed a law that allows transgendered students in grades K through 12 to access the bathroom, locker rooms, and sports teams of their choice. Opponents of that law have collected voter signatures statewide, including more than 17,000 in Kern County, in an attempt to repeal it. Transgender supporters say they are committed to keeping the law and to raise public awareness about those killed because of who they were.
These are all Americans that, they lived in the greatest country in the world like we do, but they weren't protected.
Transgender Day of Remembrance began as a vigil following the 1998 murder of Rita Hester, a transgender activist in Boston. It's been observed in Bakersfield for about 4 years.
Wow.
All right, we are back. And it is, of course, the Rebecca Juro Show. And yesterday, officially, although really there's events all week long, it is the annual Transgender Day of Remembrance. And that is, of course, is the day where we remember and honor and memorialize transgender people, men and women, who have fallen to hate violence over the course of the last year. This is an event that has been going on a long time. If you want more details and more information about how this originally came about, I would recommend. It's still up at the website. You go to BeckyJuro.podomatic.com, scroll down about a year, and you'll see my interview with Gwen Smith, who is the founder of the Transgender Day of Remembrance. That was a really good interview. She talks a lot about how the Transgender Day of Remembrance came to be and what's going on there. I strongly recommend it if you want to know more. I also recommend that if you have a Transgender Day of Remembrance commemoration in your area, that you go. If you happen to be in the Highland Park, New Jersey area, the middle of central New Jersey area, Highland Park, New Jersey, I will be at an event this Sunday. I'm planning to attend. So if you actually do attend this event, you can find out. Go to transgenderdor.org for the listing. I'll tell you exactly where it is in Highland Park. And if you make that event, I will be there. So if you do and you're listening and you want to meet me, I would love to meet you. Please come over and say hello. I would very much like to meet you, and that would be very cool. So I'm letting you know I will be there. I believe it is. Let's see. Maybe I can find it right now. Here, while we are yakking about it, I might as well just look the thing up, shouldn't I?
And while you're doing that, I'm signing Brad's move on petition.
Oh, very good, very good. Yes,
move on.
That's another thing that people should do.
Yeah.
definitely sign his petition, sign Senator Merkley's petition.
Yeah, right above it. Uh-huh.
Absolutely. You know, as I said, we played clips from Senator Merkley from when he was at Netroots Nation last year. Mm-hmm. He's a good guy. I've met him personally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing about Senator Merkley that makes me a little crazy is I think he's a great guy. I think he is awesome. I wish we had a Senate full of Senator Merkleys. I honestly do. I mean, so please don't take this as anything other than what it is. But when I interviewed him, he said, well, I think the momentum from the Senate is going to carry over and take the bill into the House. And from day one, like I said, as much as I respect Senator Merkley and I think he's a great guy, I'm saying to myself, really? How exactly does this happen? Because I'm not seeing it. Now, I just want to give people, if you happen to be in the Highland Park, New Jersey area, Middlesex County, Central New Jersey, and you want to make this, I will give you the address. It is the Pride Center of New Jersey at 85 Raritan Avenue, Suite 100, Highland Park, New Jersey, 08904. So throw that into your GPS. It's Sunday, this Sunday, the 24th, from noon to 2 o'clock Eastern time, of course. So, you know, if you can make it, come on down, and I would love to meet you. So, and please, let me know. Let me know you're a fan of the show. Let me know you're, you know, because I don't get a lot of chance to meet people who listen to the show in person, so I'm always excited when there's a chance to do that. So if you come to this thing, please do let me know. I would love to meet you. Anyway, so let's move on here. Oh God, now I've lost the
whoops.
I've lost my page.
Just a mash in there today, isn't it?
It's been a while that we've.
I'm sorry.
You know, it's been 3 weeks. You know, you get a little rusty.
I've been fighting with the equipment here for some reason. Otto is acting up. What's up? What's happening? Uh-oh. Doesn't sound good. Are you with us?
Oh, wait, no, that's me. Okay, wait. I know how to fix this. Hang on. It's me.
I don't like the sound of this.
Oh,
no. Not again.
Wait, I'm fixing it. Hang on.
No, good. Sounds like a computer crash, almost. Something like that. Something minor, we hope.
Shit.
No, that doesn't sound good. You want me to bleep out the obscenities? I can do that.
Hang on. Fix it. Still fixing this.
Yeah. Meantime, we're having some lovely Starbucks coffee here.
That's not it. That's not it. This is it. Okay, there we go. Sorry about that, Dan.
That's good.
I'm sorry. I had to turn myself off for a second there because I accidentally opened up a web page that auto-played a video, and I just had to find the page very quickly.
I was telling Brad earlier that our show is going very smoothly. There are no problems at all.
It was going too smoothly. Something had to happen. It was going way too smoothly for us to not have some sort of technological disaster happen just to keep things interesting. Always, always an adventure on the Rebecca Giroux Show. So but in any case, so all right, let's get back to what we were talking about. Now, of course, with all that, I have now completely lost the page. Oh, there it is. Okay, there's our right board. All right, let's see, what else have we got here? We've got. Let's see. Oh no, that's okay. Well, here's something. And we were talking about this a little with Brad, but I thought this was interesting. This comes to us from Politico. Now, this is really what concerns me a little bit about the whole ENDA thing. And I want to read a little bit of this. This is a Politico article by Ginger Gibson. And it's on ENDA, Democrats plan on playing the shame card. You know, doesn't this sound familiar? House Democrats have a plan to advance a gay rights bill that Speaker John Boehner has already declared dead, shaming Republicans. It's a strategy that has worked well for Democrats in the past, a campaign to pressure Republicans into reauthorizing an expanded version of the Violence Against Women Act, forced the leadership to put the bill on the floor in February and allow it to pass with mostly Democratic votes. Democrats hope to use the same playbook to push the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, a bill that bans workplace discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, was about shaming people into voting for what was the right thing to do, said Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut. It's a strategy that works. I would disagree with that. I would say it's a strategy that has worked. It doesn't mean that it works every time. Okay, and as I was saying to Brad earlier, I think the Violence Against Women Act and ENDA are two very different things. First of all, the Violence Against Women Act was not a new bill. It was a reauthorization, number one. Number two is think about the politics here. We're talking about how many Republicans are going to stand up and say, I'm in favor of violence against women, so I'm not going to protect them because, you know, it's a really hard box to get out of. On the other hand, saying, well, you know, I'm against employment for those evil gays, and why should Christian bookstores and, you know, God-fearing Americans have to do that? I mean, you know, there's that, okay? Because with the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, you can bring, you know, you can bring ridiculously, but you can bring the religious argument. It's an attack on religious freedom. What will Christian bookstores do? All three of them, you know. That's the argument, okay? Because there is no credible argument for saying people shouldn't have jobs. So they argue with this. You get the Boehner argument. Oh, it'll result in frivolous lawsuits. I mean, it's the same bullshit rhetoric that we hear over and over and over. I mean, it really is. Okay, and that's the problem. The problem is that, you know, there's this religion thing, and that's going to get in the way, okay? Or there's the frivolous lawsuit thing, and that's going to get in the way. The reality is, again, I wish that I had more faith, not in Senator Merkley, because I think he's, like I said, I think he's a great guy. I think Senator Harkin is a great guy. I think they're both to be commended for what they've done. But you know what? I don't believe in their plan. I don't think they really had a plan. I think what their plan is to say, well, let's get everybody worked up about ENDA so that they'll be anti-Republican and see the Republicans as bigots going into 2014, so we'll clean up at the elections. And then, yeah, we'll get to them sometime in the next session. Yeah, you know, after we get, just like they did in 2009, we'll get their money and we'll get their votes. And if we win, and if we have time, and if, well, the political winds happen to be particularly convenient, and if nobody's shoveling large piles of campaign cash into our coffers to get us to do something else, and if, you know, it's an alternate Sunday and the moon is rising on a Thursday, well, then maybe we'll pass the bill. Because here's the reality. ENDA is and continues to be far more valuable to Democrats as a carrot to dangle out on a stick in front of progressives to get their money and their votes every election season than it would be as an actual law. Because the truth is that most of these people, I don't care whether they're Republicans, I don't care if they're Democrats, but most of these guys, they don't give a shit about whether LGBT people have jobs. They care about whether they can get reelected. That's what they care about. They want more money. And if you have more money, then you're going to get more attention. That's exactly what we saw in 2009. It's exactly what we saw last year at the DNCC when every single major speaker was talking about marriage. Not a single one of them bothered to mention ENDA or our jobs. That's what it's about. Because every time it becomes the election season, They forget about everything else. They say anything that they think you want to hear to get your money and your votes. And then once that's over, once the election's over, once they're safely elected to office, they forget you ever existed, just like they did in 2007, just like they did in 2009, just like they're, you know. I mean, and this is going to – I would love for somebody to tell me, please, tell me why I should believe – That's not exactly what's going to happen again. That the minute we get it full on into the election season, they're going to use this as a drumbeat. That, you know, because, you know, hey, marriage has been to the Supreme Court. It's been ruled on. It's that federal effort is over. It's a done deal. They're not going to be able to fundraise on that like they used to. Okay, President Obama can't like make a grunt towards marriage and have $1 million fall into his campaign coffers anymore. Those days are over. So now they got to find something else. So that's what they're doing. Well, you know, we've squeezed the rich folks for about as much as we can get. So, you know, let's go after the working class now. Okay, and you know what? I don't want that to sound like a dig against the human rights campaign. You know, they were instrumental in setting up this situation, but they've been doing good work over this last year. They've been making an effort. It is noticed. It is appreciated. But it doesn't abdicate their responsibility for the mess that we're in today. The big reason why we are where we are with employment rights in the United States Congress today is because of the human rights campaign, because of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, because of all of these big money, wealthy donors who said, we want what we want. And if you want our money, then you are going to have to do what we tell you. You are going to have to dance to our tune. And the Democrats said, sure, would you like a tap dance with a cane? A rumba or a waltz? Okay, it's the same thing. This is a symbiotic relationship. The rich folks keep shoveling cash, and the Democrats keep standing there like a waiter with their order, taking the list. Okay, what is this about? This is about pressure from the Human Rights Campaign and other organizations saying, you know what, we're taking a pounding over marriage. Could you help us out here? We don't want to actually pass anything. But we need some kind of a show to make them think that we're actually doing something here. And you know what? If that's what it takes to get the HRC and the task force and all these other folks to focus on this issue for a while, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. Let's make it. I mean, because that's how it works in politics. Okay, HRC has been taking a pounding for years over this, and rightly so, because they deserve to take a pounding over it. I think the kitchen's getting a little too hot for them, because people are moving on. And I think they're saying, you know, if we want to remain a credible leader in this community, we better get to where everybody else has been for a decade now. And so... I, you know, whatever the motivation, doesn't bother me if that's what the motivation for HRC getting on board and supporting this is. I don't have a problem with that, as long as they do it. I don't care what their motivation is. If it's, you know, bad public image, well, that's great. I mean, I don't know how HRC's public image could get much worse, quite frankly. But they have been made, I mean, I've said, that I think what they've been doing in recent months is commendable. They deserve to be commended for it. They've been making an effort. They deserve credit for that effort. Absolutely. But I also think that when you give that kind of credit, we have to acknowledge that these people are in the process of cleaning up the mess that they made. This is their fault. ENDA would be law today if not for the human rights campaign and these other big money activists who said, if you want our money, you'll dance to our tune. And the Democrats said, oh, sure, just keep shoveling that cash in and we'll do whatever you want. From Obama on down, every one of them had something to say about marriage. Remember that at the DNCC? Every single one of them. Bill Clinton and Hillary and blah, 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 and all these guys. One guy, John Perez, Assembly Speaker of the state of California. One guy came up there on an off-hour speech, not during prime time, they got him sometime during the afternoon, and he talked about ENDA and workplace rights. One guy from California, out of nothing from Obama, nothing from Michelle, nothing from Hillary, nothing from Bill, nothing from anybody who was a primetime speaker, not even guys like Al Sharpton, nobody. It's all marriage, 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 marriage. Please, rich folks, send us more money, money, money. Marriage, money, money, marriage, 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 money, money. And after that, you expect us to take you seriously? I mean, who are you fucking with? It makes me crazy. It makes me crazy. Because, I mean, just how stupid do these people think we are? You know what? I'm sorry. I appreciate the fact that Harry Reid had a vote. And you know what? I would be a lot more willing to consider this a credible effort if this was 4 years ago. If we were sitting here in 2009 and we saw Harry Reid making an effort when this bill could actually have credibly had a chance to become law instead of like the longest of long shots that it is now. I mean, what, do you think we don't know how this game is played? We have been playing it as long as you have. Who the fuck? It makes me crazy. It does. It makes me crazy. Because it's not just the fact that they waited 5 years, that they squandered their chances to really do some good in this community in favor of pandering to the wealthy and the well-connected. It's that now they're coming back and acting like this bill has a real shot. You know, it's very reminiscent of 2007 when Democrats like Barney Frank insisted, oh, we have to kick transgender people out of the bill. Why? Because then it'll pass. Why do we need that to pass? It's not going anywhere in the Senate. George Bush has already said he would veto it if it gets to his desk. So why are you bothering to set a precedent of kicking transgender people out of the bill? Well, because it'll move the ball forward, right? So they did it. And it passed, and it did nothing in the Senate, and it never made it to Bush's desk, just like everyone knew. So now we're doing the same routine in reverse. Because what happened was people protested. Over 400 civil rights organizations banded together and said, no, this is not how we do things. You do not fuck over the little guy. If you do, we will not stand with you. And HRC and the Democrats like Pelosi and Reid found themselves standing very alone in a big crowd of angry progressives who followed them from gala to gala to rich person lefty event after event after event, and we started costing them money. We started costing them fundraising opportunities. And then all of a sudden, when the money started to be impacted, when people's fundraising capabilities started to be harmed, well, then all of a sudden, the non-inclusive ENDA was a non-starter. Then we can't have that because, you know, you can't, if you start cutting into the money stream, well, hey, then we've got a bona fide emergency here, right? I mean, you know, say what you want about values, but when you're cutting into our cash, well, then that's when you're going to see change. And it works in both ways. Cut off their cash, and you get to see change. Add to their cash, and you get to see change. Either way, it's about cash. Cash money. Boys, girls, and everyone else. All right, it is time for our final break, and we have got an old friend of the show, Nobbly Brennan. This is called Singer, Shine Your Light. We'll see you in five.
Emerald City is closer and prettier than ever.
I don't want to jump out of the dark.
you won.
For sticking around. It is the Rebecca Gero Show. We got a little bit more time to get into some stuff. So let's take a look here at ye old whiteboard and see what we still got to talk about here. Well, let's see. Well, here's something. And I thought this was interesting. And of course, this comes to us from the Washington Post. Polls now say Enda has majority support in every congressional district. Yes, you heard me. Every congressional district. Check this out. This is from the Williams Institute at the UCLA. A majority of Americans in every U.S. congressional district support laws that protect against employment discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, such as the proposed Employment Non-Discrimination Act passed last week in the U.S. Senate. When a similar bill was considered in 2007, 183 members of the House of Representatives voted against it, even though a majority of their constituents supported the policy. Current ENDA now awaits consideration in the U.S. House of Representatives, and research confirms ENDA would pass if all members followed their constituents. This is consistent with our earlier report regarding state-level preferences and the Senate vote. The Williams Institute reports that their estimates are based on multi-level regression and post-stratification. I have no idea what the hell that means, but apparently it's important. It said using 2,290 respondents from a 2008 pre-election poll and 5,786 respondents from a 2012 pre-election poll. There are 435 districts, so this comes out to less than 20 respondents per district. So how can they really get all the estimates for this map? Which is, there's a graphic that goes along with this. If you look up the Washington Post, put in ENDA, you can see the graphic. I obviously can't give that to you over the air here, but there is a graphic that shows this. So check out the Washington Post for that. But anyway, continuing on here. The short answer is the estimates will be noisy, but MRP, which is the multi-level regression and post-stratification, whatever the hell, I wish they would explain some of this stuff. I have no idea what the hell that means. And probably I would say most of the people reading this don't have any idea unless you're like a statistical expert or something. I wish some of these people would talk in like human language and not jargonese. But I guess that's to be expected in a Washington, D.C. newspaper. But anyway, the estimates will be noisy, but MRP does some smoothing based on district-level predictors. So the estimate for any district will end up being partially pooled towards estimates from other districts. Also, N equals 20 ain't nothing. That means the sample size. That's what I used to work for a statistician office, so I know a little bit about this, not very much, but you pick up a few terms. I worked there for over a year, so you pick up a few terms here and there. So if something like 75% of the people in each district support ENDA, then a simple random sample of size 20, there'd be a 90% chance that you'd see between 12 and 18 yes responses. To put it another way, if you're trying to estimate something with high precision, for example, a 2% shift in a vote opinion, you need a large sample size. But if you're trying to estimate something really easy, for example, a position where people are 3-1 in favor, a small sample will do the trick. The math isn't quite as simple as I stated above. Surveys have non-response and need to be adjusted to match the population. That's the post-stratification step in MRP. But the basic idea holds. P.S., when I earlier posted on this, some commenters brought up primary elections and others talked about the intensity of preferences. Regarding primary elections, yes, Republican Congress members have to worry about the attitudes of conservative primary election voters. But that's not the whole story, as they also go to counter to the vast majority of the people in their districts. To put it another way, general attitudes in the district are relevant, and with 70-80% support overall, I don't think primary voters can be as opposed as all that. Regarding the issue of intensity of support, the suggestion is that voters who oppose gay rights feel more strongly about the issue than voters who support gay rights. It is possible, but I have no particular reason to believe it. If anything, given the nature of the issue, I'd be inclined to believe the opposite, that supporters of gay rights feel more strongly about the issue than do opponents. And you'd need a huge, huge difference in intensity to overcome the huge disparities in support that we see from the polls. Finally, consider the estimates reported by Jeff Lacks and Justin Phillips. Estimated support for ENDA in New Hampshire is a whopping 77%, and strong opposition only about 5%. If anti-gay rights voters really cared so much about the issue, I think we'd see much more than 5% in the strong opposition category. And this was written by Andrew Gelman, who is a professor of statistics and political science at Columbia University. Who's apparently written a bunch of books on the subject. So, I mean, and I'll tell you the truth. I mean, from my perspective, this is all very interesting, and it's a well-written article, but, you know, it doesn't really tell us anything we didn't already know. We knew that there was broad-based support for ENDA. We knew that there's broad-based support for LGBT workplace rights. There has been for 20 years. That's not the problem here. The problem is the cowardice of those who are supposed to be leading on these issues, the ones who campaign on passing these bills or signing these executive orders, and then once they're elected to office, they refuse to do it. People like Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi. People like Harry Reid, who makes promises and doesn't keep them until 5 years later. People like that. It is the political cowardice of fake progressives like Pelosi, Obama, and Reid. They need to be replaced by people like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. That's what we need. Okay? You know, I'll tell you. Up until recently, I've been really floundering because, you know, you argue, you say, well, I don't like Hillary Clinton. I don't think she'd be a very good president for LGBT people. And I think she's a coward politically. I mean, you looked at how she ran scared from ENDA and trans-inclusive ENDA during 2008 campaign, during the primary with Obama. The woman practically curled up and hid under a rock when it came to our issues. So I have no faith whatsoever that Hillary Clinton is a good choice for LGBT people, even though the gays love her. You know, I'm sure she'll get lots of campaign cash from the Appletini crowd in D.C. But for working class folks, for people who live outside the Beltway in the real world, I don't think Hillary Clinton is a very good choice. I think she's just, you want to go back to the Clinton years? Really? Really? You want to go back to Bill Clinton? Don't ask, don't tell. The Defense of Marriage Act? That what you want? You want to go back to that? No, thank you. No, thank you. I think we can do better. I think we deserve real progressives, not fake progressives, not fakes who campaign as progressives and then govern as centrists like Barack Obama. Okay, I think we deserve better. We deserve presidents and political leaders who are going to lead based on their values, not by what's most convenient for their fellow members of their party, which is what we have today. And what we will have if we make the colossal mistake of nominating Hillary Clinton as the Democratic candidate for president. Because let's be honest. Unless Chris Christie saves the country, you know, puts on a cape and starts flying through the air, you know, defeating space aliens bent on world domination. That's about the only chance he's got of becoming president, I personally believe, because, okay, the guy will never get through the primary process. I mean, he's very popular here in New Jersey, popular enough to make Democrats defect, literally. They hung Barbara Buono out to dry. Because, you know, hey, he's Chris Christie. He made nice with Obama, so he must be great. Well, no, he's a right-wing ideologue, okay? The problem is that for him, not for us, for him, what made him popular, what won him the election here in New Jersey, being nice to Obama, who I should point out got over 15% over Mitt Romney here, what won him that election is what is going to destroy any chance he has of winning the Republican primary, because he made nice with Obama. The guy couldn't even get himself invited to CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee. Okay? He was denied an invitation to speak there. The far right wants nothing to do with this man. They see him as a sellout and a traitor. The Tea Party wants nothing to do with him. The evangelicals want nothing to do with him. Okay? He has committed the cardinal sin of not going screaming and denigrating gay people. And God help him, okay, when our state Supreme Court ruled and basically said, we're getting this, okay? It's going to happen. And he gave up the fight, which, frankly, from my perspective, I thought was a smart thing for him to do, okay? Because he knew, this guy, don't forget, this guy is a former federal attorney general, or not attorney general, federal prosecutor, I guess, okay? He's a former, federal prosecutor, okay? He knows when he's lost. He knows when the case, he has no case, and it's not going to win. This New Jersey Supreme Court basically told him, to his, in so many words, forget it. Give this up, because when it comes before us, we are going to find that it is required. And we are going to allow same-sex marriage. So he did the smart thing. He saved the money of going through a protracted court case that he knew he was going to lose. And would have cost him politically at the polls, I have no doubt. And he said, you know what? Okay, we gave it our best shot. I've given up. From my perspective, politically speaking, that was the smart move for him, particularly here in the state of New Jersey, because he could have only lost support by doing that. All he would have done was given Barbara Buono another thing, and she was already going after him for his opposition to gay marriage. Okay? All that would have done was underscore it and say, you know, see, she's right. He really is a bigot. Well, he was smart enough not to do that, because really what Chris Christie cares about most is Chris Christie. Okay? This is a guy who spent millions of New Jersey taxpayer dollars on a special election for Cory Booker just so he wouldn't have to be on the same ballot on him, with him. So this is a guy who his primary focus is on what's best for Chris Christie. Not what's best for New Jersey. It's what's best for Chris Christie. And hey, if it costs a few million dollars of taxpayer money for a special election, well, that's okay, because that's what's best for Chris Christie. You see, that's the thing. This guy is a selfish bastard who gives, in the end, he doesn't care about Democrats. He doesn't care about Republicans. Didn't care about his buddy Mitt Romney. He did what was best for Chris Christie. What was going to get Chris Christie reelected governor? What was going to get Chris Christie what Chris Christie wanted for Chris Christie? Do you see what I'm saying? That's what Chris Christie cares about. And you know what? It's not going to fly, because what got him elected here in New Jersey is going to finish him out west. You think you're going to win the Iowa straw poll making nice to Obama? Forget it. You think you're winning voters in places like Utah and Idaho and Texas and Alabama and Mississippi. You think you're getting those states? You are fucking out of your mind. Those people are not going to vote for you. It's going to be another Santorum, Rick Santorum, or a Santorum clone, or you know, one of these other idiots, Rick Perry, Mr. Syrup Hugger. You know, it's going to be somebody like that. You know, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, neither one of whom, I mean, at this point, I mean, this is a Rand Paul finished, basically. I mean, the guy's been exposed as a plagiarist. You know, I don't know how he has any credibility. That's the problem, is the Republicans have nobody. Nobody credible. They just really don't. They just have nobody credible. Not on a national level. They've got plenty of folks who will play to a statewide audience, plenty of folks who will play to a local audience, but on the national level, they got nothing. They got nothing, and they're losing what they already have. Because I'll tell you, I believe, and granted, I'm no great political sage, believe me when I tell you, okay? I've gotten caught trying to predict stuff and winding up incredibly wrong too many times to consider myself any great sage. But consider how badly the Republicans have fucked it up this year, this session. Think about that. I think just as people got angry and voted Democrats out of office in 2010, gave the House to the Republicans, I think you may see another swing. Because as much as the Republicans have gerrymandered whatever they can, there's still a lot of those districts that are up for grabs and are in areas where the Republicans are not in control at the state level. I mean, personally, I think what we need to do as a nation, and I mean, we don't have time to get deeply into this, but I'll say this. What we need to do as a nation is we need to take the election process out of the hands of partisans. We need to take this and make a national agency or cabinet level or whatever. We need to make elections independently run by nonpartisans. Okay, right now what we have is the equivalent of the umpires wearing one of the team's colors. You know, I mean, could you imagine if you went to a baseball game? It's the Mets versus the Yankees. And all the umpires are wearing Yankee uniforms. Would you trust that that game is going to be fairly umpired? And honestly, would you? And if not, why would you think that the same situation in the political process would be any different? It's crazy. Why should political partisans be in control of running what is supposed to be a free and fair election? What happens? Well, what you get is you get these legislators trying to tip the situation over to their side, as we have seen. I think what we need to have is a federal agency that says this is how elections will be run in every state, in every district, in every city, in every town. They will be run the same way. There will be X number of early voting days. There will be X number of opportunities to vote by mail. There will be these ID requirements and no others. You can't not accept an ID in Washington or Idaho that's acceptable in Georgia or Maryland. Everybody has to present the same ID. When you go and you redistrict every 10 years, those districting will be made on the basis of aggregate population. In other words, race, ethnicity, those kind of things will not be allowed to be taken into it. If your district has more people in it, then you get a smaller district. You know, you set it out by population. Each district should be relatively equal to the other, regardless of race, ethnicity, any of that. You know, if I'm making up these numbers, but let's say you have one district in a city with 50,000 residents. Then the next district next over should be around 50,000 residents, and the same thing with the next one and the next one, regardless of how big that is. And you divvy it up. That's what should be done. This should be nonpartisan, and it should be illegal to be partisan. Just like an umpire would be fired if he was found out to be working for one team or the other. That would not be a credible judge. That person would not be allowed to be an umpire. They kicked Pete Rose out of baseball for betting on baseball, right? Well, what about these guys? They understood that when you have somebody who's betting against one team or the other, you can't have a fair game. It undermines the credibility of the sport. How is this any different? How does not having people who are beholden to one political viewpoint, one political party or the other, not taint the process just by its very existence? That you're saying, okay, we're going to let the Republican Party, or the Democratic Party for that matter, run the election. What do you get? You get stuff like Ken Cuccinelli, you know, when they wanted to change the election process. Remember that? I don't think attorney generals, if they are elected, should have any part of that whatsoever. If you're a partisan, you don't get to run the election. You're on the field, dude. You don't get to be umpire, too. See, that's how it works. Why don't you get to be umpire since you're on one of the teams? Because that's how you keep the game fair. I mean, you want to be worried about, you see, because that's the problem, is the Republicans don't want fair. They don't want to play fair. They want to tilt the playing field in their favor. They want to bring the fences in when they're in charge and then pull them back out when it would favor the Democrats. This is the exact reason why neither Democrats nor Republicans should have any part in running our elections. Like I say this across the board. I'm not just saying get the Republicans out, although there certainly have been the most abuses under the Republicans. But I'm saying neither team, neither party should have its representatives involved in the actual running of elections. I mean, how can you, you know, it's like, how can you claim you have free and fair elections in this country when you operate them in this way? It makes no sense. This is not free. This is not fair. This is partisan and skewed towards one side. Whichever party happens to be in control of that particular state has a distinct advantage. And that's wrong. That is not free, and that is not fair. So anyone who tells you that we have free and fair elections in this country, in the United States of America, is lying to you. What we have is partisan-controlled elections that are getting more and more skewed against fairness and less fair over time. I mean, that's what we have. And like I say, I have no doubt. That if and when Democrats take control, they would be tempted to do this too. And I bet you there's probably, and I don't know them off the top of my head, but I'm quite sure there's examples of Democrats tilting stuff in their favor. I mean, I'm not trying to suggest it doesn't happen on both sides. Not at all. I'm saying that neither party should have the right to do that. Neither party should have that kind of access. Neither party should be able to be both player and umpire at the same time. That should be, forget state law, that should be against federal law. Each state should be required under federal law, and I'll leave it to the legislature the legislators to work out how this would be done. But each state under federal law should be required. And maybe, you know, maybe the answer is to have the federal government run this whole thing. For everybody, the same way. And you have to have a board or a whatever of elections, nonpartisan, federal government, just like, you know, the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan, same thing, has to be nonpartisan. They run the election, they control, they count the votes, the parties can campaign, they can do everything they want, their fundraising, their get out the vote, none of that is affected. The only thing that they are no longer allowed to do is control the operation of the elections or the drawing of congressional districts. That is left up to nonpartisans, and it is done on the basis of population. If you have X number of people in your district, you get X number of polling places with X number of polling machines, blah, blah, blah. Same thing going the other direction. You have 10 times more, you get that many more polling places, you get that many more machines. Everybody gets the same amount. Yeah, per X number, you get per X number of these things. Everybody gets the same. It's the same in Montana as it is in California, as it is in Florida, as it is in Ohio. Level the playing field. Stop putting team partisans in as umpires. That's the way to fix this country's, because you know why? You do that, Democrats win. You know it. You know it. Democrats win. If it's fair, if it's free, the left wins. But we don't have free and fair here. That's what we need. That's the answer. You want to solve all these problems? You want to solve all this obstruction? You want to get stuff done in Washington? There it is. Just like that. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Fair and free elections. We still don't have them here, gang. And we need them. We need them because it's the only way out. I mean, it really is. Now, granted, Barack Obama got elected under the current system. Okay? I don't think, frankly, I don't think the Republicans have a national level candidate. I just don't think they do. I think even the most centrist Republican at this point is so far to the right, it's just out of the mainstream of modern America, and getting further out of that mainstream literally all the time. Because that's what it is. I mean, the reality is there's just so many bigoted old white men in this country, and they're dying off, and they're being replaced by young, diverse people, men and women, who don't have a problem with gays. They don't have a problem with free and fair and accessible abortion. They don't have a problem with any of these social issues. They want to focus on things like jobs. They want to worry about, how do I make sure that my family is protected? Not this other bullshit. All right, it looks like we are just about out of time. I want to remind everybody, if you missed anything, including our great interview with Brad Delaney from MoveOn.org, we will be repeating the show in about 3 minutes. I'll be listening. I hope you will be, too. I want to remind you, we will not be on next week. We're on a biweekly schedule until the first of the year. We will see you in 2 weeks. On whatever day that is. Anyway, we will catch you then. As always, thanks for listening. Thank you to Mr. Mike. Thanks to Brad Delaney for giving us a great interview. And we will catch you in 2 weeks, gang. Have a good night, everybody. Show the people!